Welcome, Pinto and Sean Bean patrons. Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome to Extra Beans.
Welcome,
one and all.
Yes, and thank you, patrons. Thank you for your support.
Yeah, big time.
Genuinely. Makes a huge difference. Crucial.
Yeah, I'm sorry that some of you will have listened to our recent Film Corner episode about Under Paris, and I'm worried that it may have inspired some people to maybe even watch it before listening to the episode, you know,
to get the full experience. This is certainly one you can listen to without having seen the film. In fact, that's probably the recommended way
of
doing
it. The best way to experience Under Paris is through reviews.
through not seeing it.
Through not seeing it.
So I'm worried that we've inspired some pretty dismal evenings.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But at least they know that they've not been alone in their pain.
No, that's true.
But I'm relieved and also quite encouraged that our listeners have agreed with us that it's a terrible film. Because it feels like there's something in the zeitgeist saying it's a good film, which isn't correct.
On the Patreon comments, there was a couple of people who said, "No, just turn your brain off, it's good fun." I don't agree.
Sorry. It's a thing that I've tried, and I literally can't. People say it to anybody. I just can't do it.
Ideas really, flowing thick and fast.
Yeah, it's a shame. I cannot stop critically analysing, breaking things down, coming up with better ideas, better alternatives.
Coming up with your own drawings for a rudimentary helicopter. That's one of the things.
I'm doing that right now, yeah. I'm glad you asked. There it is. It's a very rudimentary. It's a very rudimentary helicopter, but I think...
Well, it's a hunchback boy, isn't it?
It's a hunchback boy.
You've got to start somewhere.
But also, if you want an idea of just how many ideas I've got coursing around this brain, look at that bit.
Empty space bubble.
It's an empty speech bubble.
Yeah.
I don't know what we can put that on. We can stick that up on the... Do people have Google Glasses yet? Do they listen through that? Cyber helmets? We'll put it up on something.
Presumably. But yes, I mean, I can absolutely switch off my brain. And I like nothing more than switching off and watching a bad film. But even I found it intolerable.
You know when your brain's on standby, Mike, don't you? Because there's a little blue glow in your left nostril.
That's right.
And then you just have to cut behind you and do that, and it goes red, and then you're on.
Exactly.
Yeah. But you're on depower mode. You're on energy saving mode most of the time, aren't you? So if you don't have a stimulating idea within 20 minutes, you go.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can set that to different.
Very rarely happens. So most of the working week, I'm just humming away in stasis.
But you're able to do records in that state, aren't you? There's a lot of things you can do in that state.
I can make a bacon sandwich, walk the dog. I can do the day to day stuff. Even drive. It's really not a problem.
You're like a fridge left in a garage, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's not the main fridge. It's just got some stuff in it, you know, if guests come round, so just have it in the garage.
It's got some potato waffles in there. They've been in there so long, you're not sure if they're actually, does even fridging have a kind of best before date on it? So like if something's been in the fridge, you always think, should I throw them out? But you've had them for so long, you feel like they may be actually ballast now that's not holding the kind of, the garage
maybe
together.
Well, they're certainly worth leaving there for at least another 7 or 8 years, so you know for certain that it's time to chuck them out.
I've got some in my freezer in my kitchen. Got a couple of venison steaks, which I think remember the Theresa May administration.
Right?
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, those venison parasites—they actually thrive in the cold, don't they? So they're going to be very powerful by the time you stir fry those.
I love your Tudor diet, Ben. Very good.
But I sort of think every time I think I should throw these out because you can't freeze forever, can you?
How many defrosts have they been through? That's the big question.
Yeah, they haven't been through like a house move or anything. No,
because it's when things go through a defrost. I recently did a defrost, and what survives a defrost and what doesn't? Because pita breads do.
Yeah.
Because I just had a pita bread earlier. I just had a little bit of pita bread that
was twice frozen.
Yeah, that was twice frozen.
Right.
And I spread it. What I did was I spread a little bit of peanut butter on the little bit of bread.
Mm-hmm.
And I ate it.
Into,
fine.
Put your name into that as well, please. Third person. Because it's more.
Henry
peas.
Packer ate a little bit of it. Henry Packer put a pat of peanut butter on a little bit of pita bread that had been twice frosted. And it was fine. Thanks, mate. But you know what? Because you know when you defrost the fridge, you leave it for 8 hours, whatever. Mm. So certain foods survive and don't. Do you know what? Because Ben, you're giving me a befuddled expression. Do you know what I'm talking about?
You defrost a freezer.
Okay, the freezer. Sorry, all right, fine. What is a freezer?
Ben uses an ice house. He's dug a hole under an oak in his back garden. That's where he keeps his haunches.
Buried deep.
Yeah.
like a Canadian trapper.
I don't refrigerate. I salt.
Yeah. So you're constantly massaging salt into meat, aren't you? Because yeah. It's pretty much a 24/7 job, isn't it?
And keeping yogurt salt. Pots. Yeah.
Yeah. Fucking hell. So for example, one thing which weirdly doesn't survive is ice cream. You defrost it.
That's not weird that doesn't survive.
You know, because you think just refreeze it, but when you refreeze it, it's never quite the same.
It's full of ice crystals, isn't it, when you refreeze it?
It's full of ice crystals. Yeah. So you end up pounding that down the kitchen sink. That's what I did anyway.
Pound it down your gob. What's wrong with you?
Well, it's an entire tub of vanilla. As no way.
It's the perfect excuse. Get some ice magic on it. Away you go.
That doesn't still exist, surely.
Yeah, I've got some in the cupboard.
Ice magic. Bloody hell.
What is it?
Is that a defrosting sauce windscreen? That you pour on it and it hardens. Liquid chocolate hardens and turns into a chocolate casing.
This is what? An Exeter thing, because Exeter famously has or had the last Athena. It's still got, yeah. They're still getting rid of 80s stock of stuff, isn't yeah. it? It's still being flogged to you.
Yeah, and when they've got rid of it, then I'm moving to wherever the next town is.
Yeah.
So hang on, what is it? It's a chocolate sauce.
Yeah, like a sauce that you, liquid sauce you pour on your ice cream.
And it goes crispy.
And it goes hard. It goes hard on the, so you've
and you've got some in your
shell.
Car.
What's that?
You've got some in your car.
In my cupboard.
I've got some in my car.
I would happily have some in my car.
That, I'd be worrying about Mike if he had it in his car. That's my okay conversation. But it went hard on your ice cream, allegedly. It didn't, because the ads presented it like a sort of mountain of ice cream. You pour the chocolate on top and it hardened like sort of ice or snow on a mountain peak, and you crack through it in that delicious advertising crack of a spoon through it, crack and crunch.
Yeah, you haven't had the patience, clearly.
The truth is it turns into a thin, semi-solid film.
Nah.
A bit like sort of
you've got to hold your nerve, my
like
friend.
Like snot on a toddler's chin. Is that
you've got to hold
concealment?
Your nerve. You've got to hold your nerve, and if you really can't hold your nerve, put the bowl back in the freezer and leave it there for 5 minutes if you
bloody
want.
Oh, wow.
You know.
So do you mean hold your nerve in terms of just wait longer?
You've got to wait longer, yeah.
It's patience,
a couple of minutes.
Then. You know what it's similar to is Tipex. I never, in the Tipex years, I never had the patience to wait long enough for the Tipex to dry. Yeah. I try and write over it. I broke through the carapace into the liquid center every time.
Yeah.
Anyway, I tell you what, weirdly, what survived, and this was a bit of a risky move by me. I had a two-part crab pack in the fridge.
What's a two-part?
So,
well,
so
you assemble called, a crab. You assemble your own crab.
It's called 50-50 crab, and it's
what?
It's
brown and half white.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's half brown meat and half white meat in a little plastic pot. And I did that the 8 hour thing, and it's such a high end item. I thought I'm just going to eat this, and it was fine.
I don't think I've ever frozen crab. That sounds mad to me.
No, it wasn't frozen. It was in the fridge. But you have to turn the whole thing off. So I didn't freeze the crab.
Okay.
I'm talking about stuff that's in the main body of the fridge as well, because the whole thing has to go off. I can't.
So how long was the crab unrefrigerated for before you ate it?
Henry Packer night's sleep.
I'm amazed that you're alive.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's just crab in a cupboard. People really, I'm very much in the kind of, this is all nanny state stuff for best before dates. The old fashioned way is, you eat something that's off, you puke your guts out, and you carry on with your life. Do you know what I mean? That's the school of thought I'm from.
I do not. I one of my few rules in life is I just do not fuck with shellfish.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, shellfish is a but I think crab is the nearest shellfish to being a chicken, I'd say. If you just look at the way they move.
Chicken of the beach.
It's a chicken of the beach. I think like any, it's not one of the slimy ones. So like an oyster or a mussel or a cockle.
Yeah.
Or like the slimers.
If it hasn't got eyeballs, basically. If you can't look it in the eye, you don't trust it.
Exactly.
If you eat a cockle that's been out of the fridge for 8 hours, like you're basically eating a grenade.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I wouldn't have done it with a cockle. I would not have done it with a cockle.
Yeah, you've got to get your affairs in order before you try that.
Yeah.
We could do a really boring segue here, potentially.
Please do.
Well, because here's a boring question. Do you keep your eggs in the fridge? Because our first episode of this month was eggs.
That was very nicely done, Mike.
That's nice. By the way, on the count of three, let's all say yes or no to that.
Okay.
One, two, three. Yes. Mike, why not?
You don't have to.
We don't keep our eggs in the fridge now.
Because you know, if you keep them in the fridge, they last for apps like ages. Eggs. Yep. So basically, you can completely ignore the best before date on eggs. If they're
we're
in the fridge.
We're a high turnaround fridge house. Do you know what I mean?
Okay,
we get through stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Could we just answer the same question quickly after three for butter?
Mm-hmm.
One, two, three.
Yes.
No. Yes.
Do you have a fridge, Mike?
I'm sensing a pattern here to this game. I think this game.
Well, hang on,
May not be the edge of the seat stuff that I was hoping it was.
Here's the third one. Here's the third one. You ready? Answer this question after three.
Again,
sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. One.
What's the question?
Oh,
come on, Ben.
A pack of 50-50 brown and white crab meat. One, two, three. Yes.
Yes. Okay. There's genuinely another one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We can do this for, which is tomatoes. Do you keep them in the fridge or not? Yes or no? One, two, three.
No.
Oh, Mike, are you serious?
Yeah.
You can't.
You're the yin to our yang.
You've hit me, clobbered me over the head verbally with this in the past, Benjamin.
You were
disgusted that I kept my tomatoes in the
fridge. It's a crime.
Why is it you want hard, tasteless, freezing cold tomatoes alongside off eggs?
What? Yeah, that's what I'm going to go and eat now as soon as we're done. In fact, I've pretty much tuned out of this conversation. All I'm thinking about is my sour egg cold tomato combo.
Oh, God. Here comes Pam. From the Mike Wozniak Domestic Zoo.
Yeah. Excuse me. Oh, she's come in and she wants to go straight out again. Is she trying to lead you off for a walk, Mike?
She's literally just come in for a walk.
Of course,
I think she just wants to tell me all about it.
That's Mike interacting with his owner. Lovely stuff. Yeah?
You're leading my very dance.
Did you get that?
I did, yeah.
That's Mike, wasn't it? You'd think it would be the other way around, wouldn't you? But... yeah. Mike, how is it there interacting with your owner? I was just
oh, that's clever.
Yeah,
because I'm the owner. Yeah.
I heard she took you for a walk this morning, Mike.
She's calling the shots, isn't she?
I hope she cleaned up all the turds you're doing all over the park.
Oh, yeah. I hope she expresses my anal glands later on. I'll be a lot more comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh. I hope you die when you're 17.
Oh,
and she has to tell people a story about that.
Bury me in that garden.
Yeah. Nice, lovely stuff. Though.
Lovely.
Tricky decision when turns out you bite someone, isn't it? And what's to do then?
Just put Mike down.
Well, I didn't want to say it.
Yeah. But also, you don't have to just put the Mike down. You have to destroy Mike. It's different from being put down. Mike Wozniak was humanely destroyed by 16 wrestlers using only their bare fists and
Chortle byline. Very few views.
I hate Next Door's dog now so much that yesterday I fantasized about it biting me so that it could be dealt with.
Oh my God, did you consider framing the dog for a bite?
No, I just wanted it to bite me.
Yeah.
But I'm sure you could get I won't name her, but she might be game, your partner, to get some sort of special jaw clamps that would mimic the bite.
There we go.
Yeah.
Take a chunk of your ass off.
And also, you could incorporate it into your lovemaking and make it a sex thing. New series.
Go on. Simulate being bitten by a dog. That's
But what kind of dog is it?
Sharpei.
It's not. It's got to be like it's a Sharpei, otherwise it's not sexy, darling. Is a Sharpei a kind of dog or a pretentious way of saying a pen?
A biro.
A biro. What is a Sharpei? What kind of dog is it?
Look it up.
Yeah.
It's very hard to describe. Imagine getting a normal dog and then making it run at a garage door at 40 miles an hour.
Okay, I'm with you. So it's got a sort of pancaked face. So is this using Newtonian physics or sort of Looney Tunes finite physics? Because I've Looney Tuned it. It's got a pancaked face and it's kind of stumbling about. But it's still blinking and its tongue is still lolling out in quite a winning way.
Yeah, a couple of canaries dancing around above its pate. Yeah.
Have you found a picture yet?
You know, you're so right. It actually looks like it's been attacked by Benjamin with a frying pan. Doesn't it? Already. So it's going to be difficult for you to do. It's going to be quite difficult for you to sort of
do any damage to this already fucked up dog.
You know what I mean? It's going to be really quite disheartening for you as you're.
Well, even a bite from. I wonder if a bite from a dog that flat faced, I wonder if it can even. Can it physically bite anything unless it sort of pipes directly into its mouth already?
It looks like it can only eat sort of Chantilly creams and various French custards. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't look like it's built for the real world of gnawing bones and stuff, does it? Very overbred.
I think it's built for the Chinese imperial court or something, isn't it? It's one of those kind of ancient.
Is it one of those?
I think you should displace your hatred from the Sharpei
right
to its owners. Because from what you've told me, it sounds like it's spending an awful lot of time on its own in the back garden. Is that true?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, oh, poor thing.
I think you need to provoke your neighbours into biting you. That's what I'm suggesting.
But I think this is all part of the sort of Grinchification of Benjamin, isn't it, that's happening? To have a neighbour with a dog that you dream of sort of
shaking your fists at.
Yeah. And basically, have you bought a BB gun yet? Because you're just going to be someone that increasingly wants to BB gun everyone and everything in his surrounds.
Have you got a cellar that's full of a selection of poisons?
The other day I went into my garden to barbecue a steak.
Yeah.
As is my wont.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And it turned out it was quite Looney Tunes. I was making the steak and the dog was going absolutely bananas just the whole time. Mm-hmm. For the full 15 minutes, just running around going absolutely insane. And I can't live like that.
Did you consider sharing the steak with the dog? Using kindness, Benjamin?
No.
Or as you call it, weakness.
You think I should win it over?
Yeah, win it over. I could see you and that Sharpie becoming a bit like John Candy and Steve Martin in the sense of one of you being dead, and it's going to be the Sharpie. No, in the sense of in their characters in Planes, Trains and Automobiles.
Well, so I find out that the Sharpie's wife is dead, and that's why it's so annoying.
Exactly. Is that what happens? I've forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
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 It's heartbreaking.
He's lonely, like the Sharpei, he's lonely.
Yeah.
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 And in a way, you're both a bit like each other, aren't you?
And of course, John Candy was bred to bark at strangers, so...
Yeah. That's the other thing, isn't it?
That's the similarity.
You and Steve Martin both play the banjo?
True.
There are
similarities. All kinds of parallels popping up.
I can fill a stadium with my work.
It's a model stadium, isn't it?
Yeah. With a capacity of less than one actual human.
And it's full of ants.
But it could be considered to be a stadium, couldn't it? Oh, actually, I've never seen anyone empty a model stadium of ants quicker than you did, Ben, your last gig. Those ants are absolutely... They actually weren't working together. It's the first time I've ever seen ants. They were crawling over each other to get out. I've never seen that happen.
It's actually quite a dangerous situation.
Ants that have been bred through evolution for billennia. To work together. their social hierarchies had completely collapsed, haven't they? The worker ants were assaulting the accountant ants, weren't they? It's a horrific, horrific sight.
Imagine if worldwide all ants did a sort of regicidal revolution.
A revolution of the ants?
Yeah.
What if they went Republican? Republican ants?
Yeah, yeah. That'd across the world, nice. You just saw tiny guillotines taking the head off all the little queens.
That would be pretty pretty, I'm going to say rad.
Liberté, fraternité.
I think it would start, wouldn't it, with one revolution, like these things do. One mound.
Are you suggesting that the ant community is a sort of worldwide is a tinderbox, just waiting for that just first spark? Happen.
Yeah. The queens have had their way too long. All they do is lie around pupating in pools of slime.
In luxury. Luxury slime.
Luxury slime. Whereas we have to wonder about and have kids on holiday look at us. We're sick of being looked at by kids on holiday. Stop looking at us.
What are your holidays like?
If you're hungry, follow where the ants are going and the ants will lead you to food.
It's a kind of mini safari, Henry. You won't like the proper... I mean, different bigs are not... Don't call it the proper safari, darling. You won't like the smelly safari.
We'll only be gone for 3 weeks. You can manage for 3 weeks if you follow the ants for the food. We've told you 1,000 times.
If we didn't love you, we wouldn't have strapped one sugar cube to your back. Get on with it. Yeah. No, but I mean, I feel like I did spend a lot of time as a kid looking at ants. It's one of those things.
No, I do. That I know you, what you mean. Yeah.
It's one of those things which you, you know, you marvel at as a child, then you grow up and you just think, you look at them and you think, bloody poor bastards, commuting for some pointless task that I didn't even believe in, probably. Yeah. You know what I mean? You look at them and you go, I'm like one of you, crawling around with.
If only they could get into road cycling.
If only I could actually be asked to do park run. But no, instead I just crawl around on my belly carrying bits of sugar around, or as I call them, recording episodes of podcasts pointlessly. Working for my grotesque mustachioed queen figure. He's not even as bad as my colleague ant Bonjamant.
Bonjamant.
He's got eyes that are even more lifeless than yours, you little fuckers. Anyway, yeah. Do you know what I mean there? Yeah, so when in the next episode we'll have been on these holidays. So what we could do is a little thing where we give your holiday a little quick review or like a number of stars, and then we'll just see next week if it lives up to it or not.
Okay.
Is that a nice little feature?
So what's yours then for your French trip?
So my French trip, unfortunately, 2 stars because I broke my leg on the second day. I was trying to do a silly trick next to the swimming pool. I had a martini in each hand and I had a baguette down the back of my... It was, I won't go into what it was or what it will be because I don't actually know yet. But it feels like it didn't work out. I slipped, broke my leg. I had a decent time in French hospital. The food wasn't as good as I thought it was going to be. But I did get to read The Adventures of Antonio Carozzo, which is a book which, again, I don't know if it exists, but again, I'm speculating. But if I do read it, if it does exist, maybe I might read it. And it's actually okay. Because I was going to get 1 star, but actually, so I'm going to give it 2 stars. For that reason. Okay. Also, I found an eagle chick on the penultimate day. I smuggled it home with me. I'm its mother. I smuggled it home with me.
Died on the flight.
But unfortunately, it died on the flight.
Oh, no.
Because...
Which is why you're currently recording from an RSPCA holding cell.
That's right. The reason it died on the flight is it absolutely hated the Lego movie and it killed itself.
And eagles are that sensitive, aren't they? If they watch a movie they don't like, they'll just
They're
die.
That sensitive. It hated it so much, it downed my mini bottle of white wine, knowing full well that it wouldn't be able to digest it. And, rest in peace. How about you? So, yeah, 2 stars. You Ben?
I'm giving my a solid 3 stars.
Oh, yeah. So it sounds like it went quite well, potentially.
Despite being hit directly by cannon fire outside Verona, trying to take the town.
Yeah. You shouldn't have marched slowly at the guns, should you?
No.
That was a mistake,
but I was trying to demonstrate to my assembled army what I wanted them to do. I felt I couldn't just send them in.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went first.
Yeah.
Cannonball straight through the middle.
Yeah.
Yep. Big hole. But survived.
Yeah.
And now I look like a sort of, you know, the things people used to chop the end off a cigar.
Yeah. A sort of mini cigar guillotine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my vibe now.
Yeah.
Sounds bad, but actually, you know.
Every cloud, isn't it?
You get a bit of attention.
But mainly from?
Old men with cigars who.
Leery old Tories. Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty good.
Okay.
And Pompeii and Herculaneum were underwhelming.
Okay. Blimey, that is hard.
He at least okay. took the box.
Well, I look forward to comparing that with what actually happened on the next episode.
Mike's May, you might not be going on holiday, Mike.
5-star, yeah.
Oh, is it?
I'm going to go and visit a family member in Istanbul.
Oh, that sounds good.
Yeah, I think while I'm there, I'm going to, while I was there, I did construct a shipping canal to rival the Bosphorus, which has been an immense success.
Because that will... In terms of income, Mike, people talk about, you know, being an entrepreneur, you can, but that to control a shipping lane that strategic.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking.
I've also filled a section of the Bosphorus with Playmobil, which is not going anywhere. So that's blocked now. So it's my canal or nothing.
You've got the keys to the Black Sea, basically.
I've got the keys to the Black Sea. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. If you're bobbing about and see a Marmara, you've got to come to me. All right. You're not going nowhere.
I mean, that has got to go down as a big win for you.
Yeah. That's why I say 5 stars, you know. No modesty here.
And you funded that just with a simple buy-to-let mortgage.
That's extraordinary.
Buy-to-let mortgage and just a couple of savings, just watching the pennies, really.
Yeah.
You know, it's your own brand crisps, not your premium ones and so on.
And it does actually pay off, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And that's what millennials don't understand, isn't it, Mike? If you make your own sandwiches, before you know it, you could own a shipping lane.
Yeah. But if you insist on putting avocado on everything... Then
forget it.
Probably won't happen.
Yeah. Sliced white, basic cheese.
Yeah, instead of having avocados on your toast, why not own the shipping lane that brings you the avocados?
Yeah.
And you.
Second exactly.
part of your life, you've got as many avocados as you like. You control the avocados. Yeah.
And it's controlled. It's controlled by a militia.
Yeah, it's controlled by a local local private militia. Well, I say local, the sort of commanders are quite international, all sorts of experience.
It's good to have a broad talent base, isn't it, Mike? You always said that.
Yeah, it's a couple of really good Angolans, a few Guatemalans, and so on.
You're looking for civil war survivors, essentially.
Very much so, yeah. They have the right level of brutality.
Because, as you've said in some of your pamphlets that you've put out, there are 1,000 ways to die, and I control all of them.
Exactly.
That's one of your...
Which really works on the disenfranchised youths that are sort of recruited for the foot soldiers.
Yeah.
So it's working really well at the moment. So yeah, great holiday really. And apart from that, did quite a good walking tour, organised pre-booked walking tour to see some of the local mosques and sites of the city, which I'll put the website for that in the show notes.
Did you do an escape room as well, Mike?
I did do an escape room.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's a great holiday.
Yeah. It was...
Establish huge canal, the likes of which the world's never seen. Yeah. And decent escape room in the
Ottoman
same weekend.
Themed escape room.
Yeah.
And of course, the people that insist on trying to use the old sea routes and don't subscribe to your... Because you offer an annual package, don't you, for access to your sea route. It's an annual package for people that don't choose that.
Well, so it's the first ever subscription model sea route.
Because you get huge discounts. If you subscribe. If you don't subscribe, you pay each time you get the ads, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called Canal Flix.
But the people that refuse to subscribe, Mike, they'd wish that they had a proper skate room, because the room you've put them in, which is 2,000 miles underneath the Earth's crust.
Yeah.
There's no escape from that, is there?
There's puzzles in it, but eventually if you solve all the puzzles, you just, you open it up onto just a sort of steel wall.
Different layers of steel wall you really can get access to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you realise that you've used up all the puzzles you could have done to pass the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is, by the way, if you're in one of those escape rooms and you're somehow managing to listen to this, that is it's a fake tuna sandwich, isn't it? It's a bait of plastic.
Yeah. No, they'll know that by now, Henry. You don't think they find that out in the first half an hour?
That's true.
So yeah, 5 stars, and that's despite it got a bit of the old squits on day 3, but that's not Istanbul's fault. I just didn't wash my hands properly.
But if anything, that gave you that little lightness, you had a little lightness in your step, didn't you, after that? Because you,
yeah,
where you thought, I will have that meeting with that that crew of nefarious types that claim to have inns in the shipping industry, rather than the other thing you were going to do that day was go to the Istanbul
go-karting center,
go-karting arena, wasn't it? So it actually flipped you that way.
It's a real sliding doors moment.
It was a huge sliding doors moment. That.
Well, see you in a month, but actually this will be next week. Finally, Mel, this is from Harry McD.
Hello, Harry McD.
Hi, Harry McD.
Dear Beans, upon listening to your recent episode on farming, I was transported back to a darker period of my life. Not once, not twice, but two times.
Well played, Harry McD. Well played. I did not see that coming.
Yeah.
He's got us off kilter. He's got us just where he wants us. It's now, is he going to apply the killer blow or not?
Firstly, on your talk about pen licenses.
Oh, it's coming. The killer blow's coming. Yeah.
Go on. And how this was such an important milestone for any primary schooler my age. I'm assuming Harry McD isn't a primary schooler.
We don't know. Yet.
His use of English is pretty complex.
He's extraordinary. Whoever he is, he's absolutely extraordinary.
Subversive.
Yeah.
And secondly, upon your chat, that at a certain point in life, everything was redesigned to resemble a Coke can.
Okay.
No, I think I talked about how a lot of people had pencil sharpeners that were in the shape of...
Oh, that's right, yeah, and the razors. Yeah,
Little did I notice my shortcomings until starting secondary school, where a stubborn, high-trousered fossil of an English teacher demanded that all notes should be written with a fountain pen.
Hang on a minute. I'm finding this email so confusing that I'm worried that my accounts are being drained. Can we all just quickly check our accounts? I think when you're trying... I think when you're trying to picture a fossil wearing trousers, you're very, very vulnerable from a data theft point of view.
Yeah, the numbers are rolling down. They're rolling down.
The numbers are rolling down.
They're going fast. We're in minus numbers.
Yeah, get this red, Ben, because I think there's some bailiffs who've just arrived at my front door. I need to...
Okay, my iPad is telling me I've got the wrong face to open it. It's telling me I've got the wrong face.
Okay, dearest Beans, I am not proud of some of my behaviours when I was younger. Brackets, who is? But needless to say that I had not received my pen licence. And so I was wielding this ink machine uncontrollably, unlicensed and unaccountable. In my hubris, it was not the pen use itself that led to any criminal damage. Brackets, except for occasional blue hands and smudged books. Close brackets. No, indeed, it was the multiple ink cartridges that we were forced to have that fatally malfunctioned, despite only begrudgingly using the fountain pen in this old bastard's lessons.
Can I say something? This reminds me of the time when I tried to read the first four pages of The Brothers Karamazov and gave up after two. Because it's that thing of, there's so many clauses within the sentence. I've completely forgotten what the mother clause was or the auntie clause or any of like the cousin clauses. I don't know what the... I mean, put it this way, if you were drawing a picture of me and Gist, you know, we'd be very far apart. I mean, I've completely lost my metaphorical power as well. as a side effect of this.
It's Spurbian, isn't it?
It is Spurbian.
It's absolutely. It's advanced level AI deepfake Spurbian. Like, what the hell? For some reason, I'm thinking I'm going to vote Trump, by the way.
So I think the gist of it is that he's feeling remorse because he used a fountain pen without having been given a license as a child. Yeah.
I think he's making an ironic point about the nanny state, is he? Or something?
I think it's an allegory for fraternal love.
He writes, I now work as a neuroscientist in Rotterdam. That's how he's able to hack Henry's mind.
And also completely unprovable one way or the other. There's no way that we can... You know what I mean? We can't prove or disprove that. It's impossible.
But to this day, I still do not have a pen license.
Well. See, what he's suggesting, that sort of Dutch neuroscience is... Like in the grey zone, it's completely unregulated.
He's trying to say that he's allowed to sort of essentially cut open people's brains and sort of prod about inside.
Yeah.
But he's not allowed to hold a fountain pen. So it's a satirical point about nanny state, I believe, isn't it? No, that's what he's saying. He's going, oh, I can do that, but I can't bloody do this.
I think this email is a kaleidoscope and you sort of see your own thing, don't you, depending on what angle you're looking at it from.
Is it possible that one of us is actually... in the middle of having our brains operated on by this person, We've gone into a sort of deep coma, and he's sending us this as a signal. And if we get it right, we can wake up again or something. Is that possible?
I did wonder when I woke up and the back of my head feels all sort of wet and spongy.
It does feel wet and spongy.
I didn't want to look at it, really.
I suppose the only way to really test out his theory would be for one of us to get a brain injury on holiday in...
The Rotterdam area.
In the Rotterdam area. So, Ben, that is an option for you. You've got a holiday coming up. You know it's going to be in Europe. You're not quite sure where yet. Why don't you get yourself down to Rotterdam and start...
Get stoving.
Get self-stoving.
Although he did say he's a neuroscientist, not a neurosurgeon, so he might not be in a position to help other than just to sort of describe exactly what's happened.
Oh, so he's...
He's backroom staff when it comes to that kind of thing.
He's a neuro pen pusher who's not allowed to use a fountain pen.
Yeah, he's building sort of, I don't know, robo-stevedore or something.
He's doing that thing where they go, we showed this person a picture of a cow and this part of their brain lit up. Yeah. Can I have some funding, please? Yeah, sure, give them some funding.
And send in the Italian clowns.
Send in the Italian clowns. Well, someone that's into books is often described as bookish. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And our chat about libraries could probably be described as library-ish as well.
Yeah, nice.
Probably didn't talk about them that much. Doesn't work.
I like that. I didn't mind that at all. But Ben hasn't. Ben is...
I thought it was bad, but
yeah.
But I'm not offering anything myself, so
yeah.
So it looks like
that is now the intro to our library's extra beans.
Okay. Yeah.
We've got a private library around our way. I did join for a while as a place to work.
Mm.
It's right by the cathedral. It's called something like the Devon and Exeter Institute. But I had a similar thing where I thought, the problem is here, I don't have, there's no office at home, there's no space at home, I just, mm-hmm. yeah. But then, you know, wherever you go, there you are. And it was the same prattling about. But also this one is quite a strange, I don't really know why it was founded, but most of the books are about sort of like agricultural planning legislation in East Devon in the 1850s. So I'm not
that
quite
was
sure.
That was one of your driest solo shows, though, wasn't it? It was mainly wheat yields. It was
very poorly received.
It was so wheat yields heavy.
Yeah.
Even the farmers didn't like it because they just got it plain wrong. So either people didn't get it or they disagreed with it.
I hadn't lived it. That was the problem.
You hadn't lived it.
I hadn't lived it. I just read about it.
I went to, I think, Britain's oldest public library when we did our live show in Manchester.
Mm.
The following day, I went to a place called Cheetham's Library or Chetham's Library.
Oh, wow.
On a kind of jolly and had a tour around it. Fairly tedious.
Yeah, you'd think it would be.
Yeah. I don't know what I was hoping it would be like.
Mm. Maybe you hoped that you'd find it riveting.
Oh, there was one good bit, actually. There was a room where a man called John Dee, I think John Dee,
mm-hmm.
was this old guy who was like a friend of Elizabeth I, who was one of these people who at the time you could be like scientist and conjurer.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so.
And sailor.
Exactly. Yeah. Alchemist and medicine man.
Mm. And close-up magician.
Yeah, exactly.
Who also does kids' party. Yeah.
And astrology to the stars.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
will advise the Queen about what to do about the Spanish Armada. And, yeah. you know, one of these kind of characters. Mm. Kind of Rasputin figure, I think.
Yeah.
And
an expert in all things in an era where there were roughly four books in total that you had to read. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, that would have been a good time for libraries, wouldn't it? That would have been really manageable.
Isn't there? There's that one person who's thought of as being the last person to have read all of the books in creation.
Yeah.
At the time of their life, I can't remember who it is.
Yeah.
Imagine that. You'd finished reading, finished books, you read everything.
I'm free.
Thank God. No guilt. The last truly happy man. I can actually lie on a beach and enjoy it.
I think though, once you don't have any books to read on the beach, you realise the beach isn't that good.
Okay, right.
That's the problem.
Then you start rereading. He was probably the first rereader.
So he was, I think, in charge of the library for a bit, and because he was a controversial guy. And there was a room that he went in, and it was called the John Dee Room. And in that room, he claims that he saw or met the devil.
Nice.
And there's an old Tudor table in there with a hoof mark on the table.
Oh, nice. That's good.
And that's where the devil stood.
On one leg?
I guess on so. One hoof? Yeah, well, I guess so.
I mean, on the table as the devil would, right? That's outrageous.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the devil's
standing on the table in a library.
So that was quite cool.
What was the next? What was the other one?
We've got game shows.
Oh, yeah.
It's only a game, so you better believe I'm right. I'm going to be snookering you tonight. I'm playing for my aim, so something, something.
You better believe I'm right.
Snookering you. Snookering you. And is that a metaphor for something, like genuinely?
Snookering.
Yeah, because in the game of snooker, snookering someone is when you block their access from the cue ball to another ball that they're allowed to legally play, forcing them into a foul move. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean in terms of tonight?
Oddly sort of dictionary perfect definition.
It was.
To trip off the tongue.
Did you write the snooker rules?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah, one of my claims to that. One of my secret claims to that. I wrote the entry. I wrote the snooker rules. Before I came along, it was the Wild Bloody West in snooker halls. It was basically people would smack each other around the heads with the cues, and they'd put all the balls into socks, whack them on the head, and then the pockets were used to drain the blood. So basically people fought each other to the death, standing on top of the green baize.
And the green baize was basically like a sort of presentation plinth for the bodies.
For the bodies, exactly.
For anyone confused listening, there was a UK game show based on snooker called Big Break. That was the theme tune. And I see what you mean, Henry, about are they literally talking about I'm going to snooker you tonight on the snooker table? Mm. Or was there a kind of double meaning?
Yeah.
Something for the mums and dads, you mean?
Well,
Mike.
I'm going to be, insert word here, you tonight.
I mean, I'm going to be rogering you tonight.
Any word.
Word
on earth.
But weirdly, what it's suggesting is that tonight you're going to be on a date with someone and I'm going to place myself in between you and the date to snooker you, to stop you from being able to fulfill the goal of a cue, if you know what I mean, which is to prod forward.
So it's a euphemism for a sort of saucy chaperone, is it?
How has this become sort of lascivious? How?
Oh, snookering you. What? Hang on, surely that's
It wasn't called Fuck Break.
So
it was an innocent game about snooker and an innocent song about snooker.
Tea time telly.
Okay, anyway, I always assumed that it had a kind of double meaning, but wasn't clear what that double meaning was. I'm going to be snooker. Also, why would you talk about snookering?
It's a snooker game show.
Yeah, but it's a bit of the game which isn't fun. It's stopping someone playing a shot. It's like, it's the kind of bit where you might change channel. So he's just snookering him. Let's see what else is on. That's like saying, I'm going to be putting up defensive walls at free kicks, putting up defensive walls at free kicks, putting up defensive walls at free kicks tonight, if it was a football show.
It may be that the jingle writer was just a little bit route one. It might just be that it's on the nose. That's what
they also might have been tired. A lot of people do suffer from tiredness. I do.
Yeah. Even jingle writers.
Even jingle writers. Okay, come on.
Anyway, here's more chat from our episode about game shows. Does Blind Date count as a game show? Because it's kind of a dating show, really. I guess you do win a holiday.
Yeah.
But you have to go on holiday with a stranger.
I quite liked Blind Date, I've got to say.
Oh, it's really good.
It was regular family viewing for us, certainly.
Some of the sort of innuendo that was going on at 5 p.m. on a Saturday night in front of the family was fairly extreme, I'd say, on Blind Date. Because basically everything they're saying, the subtext of all of it is...
Boning.
Let's bone.
Yeah.
But they're going, if you were an animal, what animal would you be? And then they're having
to go, I'd be one with a massive dong. Will it be Gerald, the animal with a massive dong? Will it be Peter, an eagle with a huge dong? Will it be Ronald? Two macaque monkeys with massive, massive dongs. It was a bit like that, wasn't it? So how did the format work? I'm trying to remember.
So the format was, there's one, I think it's, I don't remember which way around. There's one, let's say there's one woman.
Yeah, they did it both ways around each episode, I seem to recall.
Okay. And then three men behind a screen.
Hmm.
And then the woman asks the men the same question. And from their answers, she has to decide who she wants to go on holiday with.
Well, it'd be naughty number three. Was that?
Yeah, it was. Kind of, yeah.
Which was Graham, I think. Was
Graham, yeah. So Cilla Black would go, and let's get a recap from our Graham. And then Graham would go, well, who do you want to go out with? Is it number one? Is it sporty number two? Or is it sleek and silent number three? Yeah.
Yeah.
It was never sleek and silent number three.
No. I think it rewarded extroverts, really.
Yeah, yeah. The jockey, the one with the bit of badinage, the one who, yeah.
The one who you shouldn't go near with a shitty stick, wasn't it? The one that with just like, yeah, a sort of naughty, a glint in his eye.
Hmm.
And he's the one who's most likely to actually
they'll go on holiday. He's going to spend 30 years in a Thai prison. She's coming back on her own.
I remember watching that program thinking, yeah, this isn't really a good way of working out, because you're just going with the sort of silly jokes and stuff and the innuendo rather than, is that the best way to start a relationship?
I didn't think they were too concerned about that, the program makers. No. Yeah.
But also, I mean, it's quite a good analogue for real life. It's not as if people, when they're sort of starting relationships, go, I'm going to base this on a sort of, you know, it's largely just people getting hammered and,
yeah.
Well, in my day, these days it's all apps, isn't it?
Yeah. but would it be, what were the kind of questions again? I'm trying to remember.
So, yeah, if you were an animal, what kind of animal would it be? I like sport.
What's your perfect Saturday morning?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Mm. I like sport. What sport would you take me out and do in the afternoon? And they'd be like,
what sport would you be?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I'd like to play snooker with you, but instead of a pool cue, I'd use my massive cock.
Yes, that's right.
My massive chalk-ended cock.
I'd take you to watch the final of Wimbledon, Edberg v. Chang. But instead of Edberg, it's my penis playing. So my penis wobbling around the court. It's got using some of the technology they used in the film Short Circuit, trying to keep everything relevant to the decade. So kind of mounted on a kind of
like a drone,
a sort of land based drone.
And importantly, the ball boys have been excused for this match.
the ball boys have been excused, and they've all been replaced by other versions of again my cock that's been cloned. So my cock's been cloned.
I would think Chan's going to win this one.
I mean, from Chang's point of view, this is absolutely brilliant. I mean, it's like Christmas has come early. It was very innuendo-based, wasn't it? It was very Britain, gross, salmon mousse, 70s, Barbaras everywhere you turn.
Yeah. Innuendo. I assume they had it in other territories for our abroad listeners. There's no way Blind Date's only a British thing, right? It must have happened in America.
Oh, good point. Maybe it even started somewhere else. Who knows?
Yeah. They often started in Holland, these programmes.
Oh, really? Are they good at coming up with entertainment?
Yeah, they came up with Big Brother and lots of formatty shows that you've heard of.
Social experiments.
Yeah.
You know, Traitors, was that Danish?
Yes, you're right. Yeah, yeah.
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 The one I remember really loving was Price is Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
It's was that Bob Holness?
No.
That's Brucey, isn't it?
No, when I watched Price...
Come on down.
Holness was Blockbusters.
That's it. Yeah.
Obviously, which was brilliant as well. A lot of these, they have tried to relaunch, haven't they? Most of these have been
with Stephen Mulhern lately. Normally.
Normally with Stephen Mulhern. Mulhern is seen as the secret source, isn't he? So I'm looking at The Price is Right. Oh, it's an American. So I'm going to put UK 80s. I think it was someone called Leslie again, because most people were called Barbara or Leslie.
That's true. My sister and I were also big fans of Going for Gold, I seem to remember.
Was that to do with Blockbusters?
Going for Gold. It was international. It was the European quiz contest.
Oh, wow. I didn't think I watched that.
Something Kelly, maybe? Irish.
Oh, Henry Kelly.
Henry Kelly.
Yes. There was another one with Henry Kelly. Maybe it was the same one. And all I remember as a kid, it had a lot of these shows had very satisfying sound design. Mm-hmm. So it'd be like, if you got a question right, it'd be like, ka-chung.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
God, yeah. A bit like the catchphrase.
Yeah, exactly. They had really good noises, and I don't think they bother with that stuff anymore.
Operate. It's appealing to totally sub-simian parts of the brain, isn't it? We've worked out they really like. That's what the people need. Yeah, it's true. And bright sparkles, essentially.
Yeah.
It's the stuff you use for a toddler. And weirdly, it is actually as a kid that I loved, and it sounds like you as well, as a kid, really quite young. It's just shiny lights and and some sort of soon to be cancelled person in a. Well, eventually to be cancelled person in a sparkly jacket, isn't it? That's your called Leslie or Leslie.
So who is Price is Right? Have you looked it up?
Yeah, it was Leslie Crowther.
Leslie Crowther.
Of course.
But Price is Right. Very good. Huge pound sign as part of the logo. That's a big sparkly pound sign.
Yeah.
And yeah, you guessed the price of the stuff.
Yeah.
And won the stuff.
Clarity was all
brilliant.
Clarity was everything, right?
Yeah. And the stakes felt so high because there was a washing machine with some bunting on it, some sparkly bunting.
But there must be a reason now why people win cash instead of stuff. And it'll be something to do with tax or, you know, there'll be some regulation that stopped it somehow. Do you know what I mean?
But
it's so boring now to go, you've won £800.
Come in and install it or something like that. Or
yeah, I don't know.
But I think, Ben, I'm not sure what the economics of this is, but I think things like white goods and things like TVs are now much cheaper than they were, basically.
Yeah.
That's the economics of it. It's quite simple. I just think like that
but
kind
a car
of stuff
is still
so
loads
cheap.
Of money.
Yeah, car is still obviously a really good price, but that's almost there was a too expensive probably for people to want to give away. But
is it a product placement thing as well? Is it? Like
I think
rivalry
it
between.
But the other thing, right? And this probably is total
brands.
Crap. But in my mind, this is why burglary has also declined.
No, this is true. Yeah, this is true.
Has it declined?
Because tellies aren't really worth very much money.
Tellies,
yeah,
tellies generally. What can you burgle? Tellies. Fridges. I mean, do people rob fridges? But like white goods, those sort of items are sort of like items you can pick up, put on a plinth, or put in the back of a van when you know put on a plinth on telly or on the back of a van when you're robbing someone's house.
You need to know that you're raiding a little safe with some jewels in. You know, there needs to be the Opal of Iskinder or something like that. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Which isn't your standard burglary stuff, is it?
Yeah, because how do you identify the Opal of Iskinder when it is kept, as always, in a chest containing thousands of very, very similar-looking opals but that are valueless, isn't it? Cause, and the only way you can do that is you need to have the tattoo of Krathandi. And the only way you can have that is if you've cut the forehead off a Buddhist monk, which is incredibly rude.
Or you could have won it on a game show.
You could have won it on a game show. it's true. Opals, because in the old days, you know, everyone would have, you know, you'd have a sacred opal or you'd have just some sort of valuable small object.
Well, people used to have things like candlesticks that were worth loads of money.
Did people nick those?
Yeah. But no one's got like that.
Sconces.
Yeah.
Did you, because my childhood home suffered several classic 80s burglaries when I was growing up.
Yeah, but that's the rub and the smooth of being a metropolitan elite. So we were never burgled because burglary didn't exist.
Because your doors are always open, aren't they?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Because we had a couple of burglaries and everyone, there was a spate, wasn't it? 80s was burglaries. That's when they happened in my life. Like, people would just get burgled. So they took tellies. I think they took our Spectrum computer. And they took my granddad's war medals.
No.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a bit of a shame. But that felt like that was very much of somehow the two sides of the same coin, wasn't it? There was game shows, so people were. It was all about sort of stuff that you could pick up and remove, take home from a game show or nick from someone. There's like, on the one hand, people were winning this stuff on telly, and they were nicking it from your homes as well.
So there's a kind of economy of circle.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
So when inevitably we launched the Three Bean Salad game show.
Yeah.
Right.
What are we going for prize wise? Are we jumping on the cash bandwagon? Is it just cash? Are we trying to bring back white goods? Is there a third way?
Shares in BAE Systems.
Yeah, we can always print out a few more of those. Obviously, experiences are something people value much more highly
now. Red Letter Days.
So a lunch with Ben Partridge, for example, that kind of thing.
An engineless glider.
Yeah, you could exactly. So you know,
clay pigeon shooting with Havers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
You could, like you know, if you come first, you could win like a 2-hour lunch with Ben Partridge. If you come second, you know, you could win like a 3-hour lunch with Ben Partridge.
Oh, lovely. That lovely, because the other one was longer, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So it's implying that it's quite accurately that it wouldn't be an enjoyable lunch. No, because those things must be so awkward for everyone, mustn't they?
Now, when you listen to this next section, it'll be tempting to listen to it all, but remember you must leave 10% and tithe it to your lord.
Yeah.
It's the local baron must have their war tax.
Indeed. And they must listen to the final 10% of this section. Which is about feudalism.
Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. The one I really can't be arsed with is the Fall Guy. I just don't care. Sorry. I'm not watching the Fall Guy.
I quite fancy that.
Is that the one about
Emily Blunt and what's his chops?
What's his name?
Ryan Gosling.
Is everyone a bit too gorgeous? Is that what it is?
Everyone's a bit too gorgeous, Mike. Yeah, maybe it's that.
Is it because the ultra beautiful Hollywood stars are starting doing comedy?
Maybe comedy should be a pug face.
Comedy was for the pug face. That's what that was our thing.
It's for the pug. It's for the goblinoid.
Exactly. That was the only thing. And the goblinoids had was comedy.
The three of us. Let's face it.
That's all we had.
Let's face it. The three of us would grace any goblin banquet, wouldn't we? We'd be on the top table.
And within comedy, you can be handsome for comedy, for example.
Yes.
But if you take someone who's handsome for comedy and put them in a sort of Ryan Gosling, Emily Blunt situation, that you see the goblinoid, it shines through.
They're going to have to play the goblin. We're going to have to write a goblin into the script. I'm sorry. We're going to have to call Tom Stoppard. Call who the hell. We need a goblin in this story right now.
Well, the other one I think of is the Japanese one, which I get much more excited about because it seems much more interesting.
Ah, feudal Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
And I'm quite jealous because you're both watching Shogun, aren't you, at the moment? And I don't have Disney Plus. I'm seething with
jealousy. Not watching Shogun?
I don't have Disney Plus.
Oh, Mike, I assumed you were watching. I've been kind of watching it because you're watching it in online party.
It's the most Mike Wozniak show of all time.
Honor suicides. 5 per episode, methinks. Could this be any more Mike? People making a slight boo-boo at a dinner party and then offering to literally destroy their own bloodline forever. Everything's just honour. Honour killing, honour-based violence.
There's a bit where a bloke falls in the sea and then he just sort of goes to do himself in.
Oh,
because
that's right.
He's kind of brought...
Just because he fell in the sea.
He fell in the sea. I mean,
where would that leave your average British holiday?
If Neil Kinnock had done that in 1992...
What happened with Kinnock, Ben? Sorry,
Kinnock famously fell over in the sea. I think in Brighton...
He fell over in the sea or into the sea?
Well, there was a party conference, I think, in Brighton.
He fell out of the sea?
And he was walking along the beach and he fell over and then was engulfed by the waves. Do you not remember that?
No, but it's so funny, isn't it, when things happen and they just have so much symbolic power.
Exactly.
It's amazing the extent to which elections and stuff are determined by that kind of thing, or seem to be.
Did he manage to spin it? Because it's
just something symbolic happening.
Yeah.
You what?
Because that's a... Did he manage to spin it? Because that's a kind of reverse kink and newt, isn't it, right there? But that's harder to spin.
It's harder to spin,
falling into
isn't
the
it?
Sand, and the sand, you know, the nation has come to me. It's not... The nation has ejected me into the channel.
Okay, guys, we're going to have to canute. There's a whole team of people going, okay, we're going to have to canute this.
We must present Neil Kinnock as a very Neptune.
We're going to have to go full Neptune. Okay, so start...
Get him a trident.
We're going to have to start sizing up Kinnock's feet. What is he, size 9? Can we get aqua feet in size 9? We're going to need aqua shoes.
Can we get some scaly chinos, please?
We're going to... I don't care if the technology isn't there yet. Make the technology. Start skinning snakes. You start skinning snakes now, and you start buying trousers. Yeah? And then
we need to get Roy Hattersley in a shell bikini now.
Or replace him with a haddock. Either. But it needs to happen by the end of today.
We need to contact anyone from the Botticelli estate. So anyone who's alive with a Botticelli surname, we need to get them around and they need to start reimagining Botticelli's Venus with Roy Hattersley at its pulsating core.
For anyone listening who doesn't know who Neil Kinnock and Roy Hattersley were or are, Neil Kinnock was the Prime Minister we never had. Should have had.
Leader of the Labour Party.
Best Prime Minister we never had, did you mean to say, or just Prime Minister was the Prime Minister we never had?
Yeah, that isn't the phrase, is it? You're right. It should have been the best.
I'm the Prime Minister we've never had yet.
Yeah.
As well.
I would put huge amounts of money on you never being the Prime Minister.
Mm. Okay, we'll come on to that in a sec. But just quickly, for the explainer, we've explained, Roy Hattersley, we've explained him?
He was also involved, but I can't remember what his job was.
Senior Labour, Shadow Cabinet guy.
Yeah.
And with all the subtlety of the British satirical scene that we're so famous for, he was basically just pilloried for spitting slightly when he spoke, wasn't he?
He had a bit of a lisp, and yeah, and people really laid into him for it.
Yeah.
And for anyone who doesn't know, Neptune, of course, is the... is he sort of Prime Minister of the... It's all presidential, isn't it?
I think he's king, isn't he?
It is feudal, in fact, isn't it? He's king of the deep.
Yeah.
Green body... If he has a fish, I believe he has a fish dick. Does he have a fish dick?
A fish for a dick. Let's be honest.
He's got a fish for a dick.
He's got a filter feeding dick. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but he's very muscly, isn't he? He's a sort of gym bunny, green muscly body, green scales.
When I was on holiday in Bologna, they've got a statue of Neptune because they're really into Neptune for some reason.
Yeah.
And the sculptor did it in such a way that if you stand in a certain angle and look at it from behind, because of where one of his fingers is pointing, it looks like he's got a boner.
Nice.
Yeah.
A lot of Italian... is there a thing where you have to rub the boner?
No.
A lot of Italian statues have a thing where you've got to rub the boner. There's a hog statue somewhere in Italy where you have to rub its boner.
Yeah.
No, you have to rub its snout or whatever. There's always like...
I've rubbed Juliet's breast in Verona.
Have you really?
There's a bronze statue of Juliet from Romeo and Juliet. Okay, and you're encouraged to rub the bronze breast of Juliet for luck.
Okay. Elephant in the room time.
Yeah.
And bearing in mind the question.
Yeah.
What's it actually like being the fish that is Neptune's dick? Like on a daily basis. You wake up and you're like, here we go again. I mean, how much autonomy?
I think it'd be pretty swell, actually. I think it'd be a bit like the sort of Tailor of Panama type thing, where you get to hear about a lot of very interesting high-end conversations.
Well, you're in the room, aren't you?
You've got some good goss. You've got the in, you've got the scoop.
Mike, can I just ask you to explain what the Shoemaker of Panama is, or whatever it was you said?
The Tailor of Panama? Well, it's a Le Carré novel. And
of course.
Sure, you know, Mike made that reference. I had no idea what he was talking about. For some reason, I was just like, I don't know, I'd let it go. I was going
to... I sort of went to... I imagined kind of like sort of German fairy tale, you know, like...
Yes, I was thinking it's some ancient or you know, some Commedia dell'arte thing or something that I should know about. And I think I did my standard London sort of dinner party nod of like, of course.
Of course.
But actually, I had no idea what he was talking about. So it's a Le Carré novel.
Yeah. And one of the characters is a tailor who is tailor to the great and the good of Panama, who is a sort of trusted serf figure, low in the feudal system. And so these people will have all sorts of chats in front of him thinking this is never going to go any further. But he gets recruited by the British Secret Service.
Yes.
Oh, nice. Does he hide little microphones and stuff in people's jackets and things?
Doesn't need it, mate. Doesn't need it. He's the Tailor of Panama. Gets all the sweet goods then and there. He's in the room.
So he's like the fish dick.
He is the fish dick. He's the fish dick. Yeah, yeah.
Of Panama.
And in terms of storytelling tropes, he is the fish dick. Yes.
And of course, there are only seven characters really in any story.
That's right.
The king, the knave.
Keyboard warrior.
Yep. Lecherous old git.
Mm-hmm. Dog trainer.
Fish dick and Des Lynam.
Fish dick and Des Lynam. And you combine any of the two and you got a great story. When I had my beefcake journey, my foray into getting a super great bod, which by the way is back on.
Really?
Ooh.
Yeah, but I won't go into it now because I think we're not respecting the topic enough in this episode.
Okay.
But it's to be discussed.
Oh my God.
Maybe next week.
Well, it's sort of on topic in a way because that was your way of trying to rise up the feudal chain to get to knight class, wasn't it, really?
Well, specifically the bod I asked for was Neptune. So I said I want Neptune's bod, Lord of the Deep.
Sure.
And now, and only today have I understood why he kept on trying to put herrings down my shorts. And he kept saying, "You've got to start at the beginning, Henry. Stop discarding the herrings that I'm lovingly putting down your pants. You said you won the Neptune bod." He was sort of vaguely Italian, by the way. I wasn't just doing it for...
With a Swedish accent.
I wasn't just doing that for comic effect. I was doing that for documentary realism. Yes, he was Italian, but clearly spent at least 15 years in the Swedish education system. Anyway, what are we talking about?
I think you sort of have to tell us about it, really, Henry.
No. I think it's completely got nothing to do with the topic. Come on.
Henry, how have you suddenly started caring about this 13 series is in?
I suppose in a way, as Mike was trying to say a minute ago, we do live in a feudal society, don't we? We have people with great bods at the top.
Mm-hmm.
We have people, you know, suffering under the yoke of having an average bod.
Some of us have just got the fish stick. So that's the problem. And you think you'll get, you know, you feel like you're halfway to Neptune, but really you're not. You've actually gone further back, if anything.
No, some of us have got an entire body that is a fish's dick. Is that what you're saying? You got fish dick bod. No, so look, me and Ben labour under having average bods, don't we? Mike has a superb bod, but Mike has sort of natural... You just heft things around a lot, don't you, in car parks and stuff, I think.
Yeah,
sort of natural. But just huge bags of cement and
grain.
Huge bags of charcoal and stuff, right?
Yeah.
Grain. It's just part of your daily routine. You're burning off thousands upon thousands of... I mean, you're burning off 1,000 calories as we speak just because you're angry about the fact you could have got a better broadband package. Aren't you? So there's just sort of emotional calories are being burnt, aren't there?
Yeah, thought is my gym.
Thought is your gym.
Mm.
And just parochial resentments.
Yeah. they keep you taut.
So my personal training thing didn't work out in the end.
Mm.
Partly because the guy had his before and after pictures, as we discussed, it wasn't clear if he had gotten the wrong way round or something, or...
Yeah.
That's why you were too lazy to go to the sessions.
That's why. So what I've done recently is I've started going to classes. So it's a different approach. It's not the one-on-one personal trainer approach.
Business Portuguese.
Exactly, business Portuguese. Because there's so many untapped markets out there, Ben. If I can be massive in Lisbon, I think a great bod will just follow, won't it? Basically, it's like a boot camp thing. Should I say the name of the place or not?
Is it one of those like military fitness type things?
Not exactly. It's called Barry's Boot Camp.
Wow.
Right.
So I was recommended it by someone.
Barry? Can I just say, this is prejudice, but I can't imagine an incredibly healthy man with a great bod called Barry. For me, Barry is a couple of sausage rolls in the back pocket.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Having a lovely time, pint of Foster's.
Wicked dance player.
Wicked dance player, exactly. Great on the karaoke. Lovely bloke.
Yeah. Does a trick on holiday where he takes his top off and wobbles his torso around for his mates, and they laugh and cheer him on and pour beer on him.
Exactly.
Outstanding raconteur.
And listen, I like Barry a lot, but if it was called, Dante's boot camp or whatever, I'd be like, oh, okay. Yeah. Who's Dante?
Mm. Yeah.
Barry is the kind of guy who would potentially set off a firework from his ass crack during the Euros. Is that how you're picturing?
Yeah, exactly.
But up his own ass. Yeah.
But up, yeah. Going up, going in.
Yeah.
That's the level of commitment Barry would have.
Classic Barry. Yeah.
Classic Barry.
He'll be fighting sparks for weeks.
Full Catherine wheel up the ass.
Full Catherine wheel, sparklers, couple of bags of popcorn, just the whole
burger van. Full Guy Fawkes.
Full Guy Fawkes. and a three-man St. John's ambulance crew went up there as well. And, you know, hats off to them.
Because one of them's in the middle of his A-levels at the moment, so it must be very stressful for them. But
yeah, and that's the quiet heroism that goes unmarked. Yeah, so Barry's boot camp is basically it's a sort of basement.
Sounds a bit like a fight club.
Yeah, it's sort of it's basically a mixture between a downstairs regional nightclub.
Yeah.
And the conventional sort of Catholic interpretation of hell. So combine those two things. So you've got...
And they're close anyway.
They're pretty similar in my head, to be honest.
Yeah, they're already close. So we're talking fine margins here, fine distinctions. But in pure... But in, you know, in the Catholic hell, you don't have very, very, very loud, aggressive dance music. And in a regional nightclub...
There's less three-headed dogs.
There's less three-headed dogs.
Yeah.
I mean, there was... I mean, there was. I would say there was 15 head. There was 15 head of three-headed dog down at Barry's. That's five three-headed dogs. although I think there may have been four three-headed dogs, a doubleheader, and just a dog. But I couldn't tell because it was so dark and I was in so much pain. It could have just been 15 human gym goers. Actually, now I come to think of it.
Dressed as cockapoos.
Dressed as cockapoos. So it's basically, so it's like a dark hell zone. You go into a dark space. Everything's so dark. Okay, well, to start with, I had a bad start because I turned up to this place. I'd booked my class. It started at whatever time. 5:30. That's literally just an example of a time.
Okay. Bit of texture. Yeah.
Bit of texture. Say 5:30. Say, for example, if it was the 90s...
Neighbours is starting.
Second showing of Neighbours would have started. Do you think in terms of Neighbours as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But say 5:30 was Neighbours starting, wasn't it? Second showing.
You wouldn't have been there, basically. Yeah.
So anyway, so I turned up. I cut it a bit fine. They said arrive 5:02 for the induction or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, do you think I need an induction? Look at my bod. Yeah. just look at my bod. I should, if anything, I should be Barry, and you should be paying me to go into my basement. But anyway, I'll let it lie. But anyway, I turned up five minutes to at the address, but the place just wasn't at the address. Did you ever get that? It's like, what? It's just not.
Well, often, yeah, with scams, that's often how it works. And then you're bundled into the back of a van by a bloke called Barry.
Yes, which I assumed was part of the induction. I assumed that was the induction. Okay, I'm being inducted. In the back of a van.
This is the induction sack going over my head.
The induction sack. I think I am burning calories. I think I'm burning calories already. I'm absolutely terrified. I'm burning calories. I'm very, very tense.
And it makes sense that I'm giving them my PIN number. Yeah. They'll need that so I can pay them.
It wasn't at the address. I then sort of gave up and realised it was round the corner from where the actual address was. Anyway, I went in and went down into the dark hell basement. So all red, it's basically black and red. It literally is the colours of hell. So all the lighting, it's like there's red neon and then black spaces. So you're not quite sure what's a space and what's a wall. So you have to kind of hold your hands out in front of you a bit to get round.
And then you go in and then you see a senior Tory party politician in a gimp suit.
That's right. Welcome to the Tory party conference.
Hey!
Lovely.
Went into so I basically arrived in the class late, so I was already off kilter. I was already...
Yeah.
And, you know when you go into a new place, you feel unconfident and worried?
Yeah.
That you're going to be seen as a social pariah in some way. And so... Two things hit me basically at once as I went in. One is, I'm going to say I felt like I was comfortably 20 years older than everyone in there.
Oh dear.
So that hit me. And two, the other thing which hit me at the same time was I was finding it quite hard to see because it was so dark. So I was basically this sort of... This kind of bald guy stumbling around holding the walls. I went in and I had to go straight on a treadmill. So the way it works this place is half the people are doing treadmill, and half the people are on the floor doing weights and push-ups and stuff. And there's a guy on a kind of mic who is just going, right, here we go, hit it, yes, just harder, all right, now start pumping, pump harder. That kind of thing. And like, so and an incredibly aggressive dance music. It's pitch black. I can't see where I'm going. I'm running forwards, but not moving. It's disorientating because I'm on a treadmill. There are different heights and things. Oh, I said 15, right, 3 through 6, 4.9. He keeps on barking out orders as to what to do on the button. I was like, I couldn't work out what was going on. At one point, I was going way too fast, and I pressed a button which made it go really steep and stuff. it had steepness. I didn't, that's new to me, treadmills with steepness.
So you're essentially sprinting up a mountain in the dark.
Yeah, the whole thing was quite stressful. Then you'd go off the treads, then you'd be on the floor. You had to go and pick out your weights, which was quite awkward, because you have to sort of decide what level of weights you are.
Oh, I see. And is there a hierarchy to that? Is that
Well, there's literally a numerical hierarchy of how heavy something is you can carry. It's pretty brutal.
It's a bit like when you go bowling and you have to sort of work out what kind of weight of ball you are.
Yeah, but it's much less of... With bowling, it's much more of like, oh, I've got a feel for this one. I love the purple burnish on this one. I've got a feel for it. It's more hunch-based. Whereas it's the thing about weights is it's not, you know... It's partly what you do with this. It's not necessarily, do you know what I mean? It's not strictly...
How much it weighs.
Yeah, but I might appear to take a lower numerical number, but how many times am I actually lifting it? Or how hard, or, you know what I mean? How well... It's not... just technique as well. Strength is often a matter of technique, partly. Anyway, I got my weights, my not very strong, high weights. Went over, and so basically he was making you do these things, like, I mean, you guys have probably not even heard of these things, crunches,
handstand, star jumps, roly polies,
burpees. Still not quite sure what a burpee is.
Burpees, yeah, they're horrible.
Backwards roly poly.
And it was just very agonizing and painful, and very, very hard for me to do. But the other thing that was quite difficult was this guy, so this really muscly bloke, was going around sort of talking loudly through the PA system, whatever. And he was having banter with people. He was going, all right, Bonzo, how's it going? Yeah, did you have a go for a big one last night? Did you? Right, yeah, work it off, mate. He's doing a lot of that. And so at one point, I was on my back trying to lift up these really, really small weights. I had tried to explain to everyone that these are actually quite big weights. I'm just... really, really massive.
and you're so massive, you actually distort numbers.
I'm so big. I create a cut. It's a type of numerical distortion, which is very hard to explain. I basically haven't got time to explain it right now. But you can stick a zero on that number. Yeah, easy.
I've actually made the postcode of this place change, which is why I couldn't find it to begin with. That's how big I am.
I bend gravity in a way, which is why it looked like I was stumbling around. I couldn't see where I was going on the way in. It was actually because I was distorting the earth's crust. What can I say? But I was on my back trying to lift him away, and he knew my name. He knew your name from when you signed in,
because you have to change your name by deed poll to Barry, don't you? To go,
you have to change your name to Barry. Right, Bazza 1, Bazza 2, Bazza 3, Bazza Big Barry, Barry. It's all versions of Barry. I was really struggling, and I thought, I was thinking to myself, please don't try to banter with me. Please just have enough understanding, Barry. I know that, Barry, you're mainly muscle. please understand that I'm not in the banter zone. But he came over to me and he went, Henry, you got any plan later today? For one thing, I was a bit like, what am I going to say? What have I got planned later on today? It so happened that later on that day, I was playing ping pong.
What a life you lead.
So I went...
It's like you live on a cruise ship.
Yeah, I think we do, that's the kind of lifestyle I have, yeah. I'll be eating in a choice of 4 restaurants.
Half an hour on the flumes. And then it's off to see the Go-Go Girls, right?
Yeah. And then vomit all night. uh,
I said ping pong. I said ping pong. And then he went, what? What's that? Ping pong. There's this music. I was in physical agony. I was having to shout ping pong. It sounded so pathetic. It was one of those pathetic moments of my life. I was shouting ping pong in a hot, sweaty basement. I felt really embarrassed about the fact that I was playing ping pong later on. It seemed to confirm what I was worried that my persona was coming across at, which was really sort of old, pathetic git who shouldn't be here.
And you should stick to ping pong.
Exactly.
Stick to the safer sports.
And how did he react then when he told him you were playing ping pong?
He sort of laughed and did some banter that I didn't understand.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He went, oh, yeah, well, I'm ping pong. That's what I heard.
It sounds a bit humbling.
It was quite humbling, but I think the beefcake journey is back on, though, basically.
That's good.
Yeah.
Okay, that's Extra Beans for this month. Thank you so much for signing up to Patreon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
Super duper. Cheerio.
Bye.